I'm going to ask,
We have a quorum. Representative Doty, would you move the minutes of January 26th?
Madam Chair, I have examined those minutes carefully, and the minutes of January 26th look great to me, so I would move those minutes.
Representative Doty says the minutes of January 26th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Welcome. Mr. Lean. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is David Liam. I'm a senior planner with the Department of Military Affairs. And I brought Colonel Almas with me for any kind of technical support questions you have about the National Guard. I really appreciate the opportunity to present this National Guard Youth Challenge Program study to this committee. I'm really going to touch on identifying possible locations for a youth challenge program. I'm going to address estimated startup costs for the state of Minnesota, application and startup procedures, some results of state surveys for funding mechanisms for the state match portion, and provide recommendations. A little background about the Youth Challenge Program. In 1992, Congress authorized a pilot program with the federal government providing 100% funding for a Youth Challenge Program that dealt with at-risk youth that were ready to drop out. In 1995, the program was expanded and extended, but the funding portion changed to a 75% federal funding level and a 25% state match. And then in 1998, Congress permanently authorized the program, but changed again the funding formula to a 60% federal match and a 40% state match fund formula, which is current as of today. In 2007, the end of 2007, there were 33 programs in 27 states and territories, including the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. The program is really designed around a quasi-military, highly disciplined platoon type of structure, in which it's really based on prevention and not remediation. You can't be sent to this program. You actually have to apply and be accepted into the program. It does cover 8 core components, which I'll discuss in a few moments, and it's really holistic in its development. It's based on education, self-discipline, self-esteem, and lifestyle changes. The program is really designed around 3 specific phases. The first phase is a 2-week pre-challenge phase when the cadets that are invited to this pre-challenge phase are physically and mentally challenged in a bunch of disciplines. They have to prove that they can actually make it through the program. Once they are formally enrolled into the program, they enter a 20-week residential program in which they start their 8 core components. Once they graduate out of that residential program, they enter a year-long post-residential mentoring phase in which they're mentored with a community leader, somebody that can provide and sustain the positive changes. Now, the 8 core components that I spoke about a few moments ago are really going around, number 1, academic excellence. They really want these at-risk youth to graduate from high school or earn a GED. 2nd is physical fitness. 3rd is job skills, resume building, interview skills, things to position them for a job later on. The 4th is service to community. Each cadet must provide at least 40 hours of service to community. The 5th is health and hygiene, really training them to be healthy and well-balanced. 6th is responsible citizenship, in which they take classes on government and your rights and responsibilities as a citizen. The 7th is leadership and followership, which builds strong character. And the last core component is life coping skills, which deals with self-esteem and self-discipline. Now, each program is allowed to be flexible according to community needs, and they've really kind of developed 2 different models. 80% of the existing programs are really geared towards testing for the GED and job placement skills. The other 20% are actually certified alternative high school, and they work closely with the Department of Education to recapture credit and to graduate from high school. Regardless of which model, both have to test for the adult basic education testing, the TABE testing, in language arts, science, computers, math, and social studies. Each cadet to graduate must pass at least 80% approval or rating on those skills. The fun part is teachers are contracted with the local school district to provide curriculum and education. They don't have to supply any of the discipline since the professional cadre take care of the discipline in the classroom. The makeup of the cadets that have enrolled in the history of the program are usually 80% male to 20% female, which is a little different than the national dropout rate, which is about 50-50. About 46% of the cadets are white, with 29 being African American and 15% Hispanic. Now, once these cadets graduate from the residential program, they are tracked during that one-year mentoring phase to see what their job placement is, or either job placement or academic. And about 54% of these students that pass the residential phase end up with a job. 32% either continue school or go on to secondary education, and 11% join the military. Now, we were asked to identify facility requirements and locations, and really the program was originally geared to be stood up on an active military base or at a standalone facility if an active military base was not available, similar to like Minnesota. We don't have an active military base. Now, you really have to take a look at recruitment of staff and recruitment of cadets. If you're out in the boonies, it's going to be tough to recruit staff and cadets. That's something we looked at. And we've identified four possible locations for a youth challenge facility in Minnesota. The first being Camp Ripley. However, this site would have to have new construction to build a facility for it, since we have the land, but we have no existing structures that are available. This facility, though, however, would provide infrastructure support, since it is a training facility and it is a central location in the state. We've estimated the construction cost for a new facility at Camp Ripley at $5 million. The second site we've identified is the Army training site in Arden Hills. And again, this would require new construction. It again provides support to infrastructure sharing, since again, it is a training facility and it's close to the metropolitan area. We've also estimated that cost at $5 million. The third possible location we've identified is the Minneapolis Public School District has 12 closed schools for possible purchase and rehabilitation for residential buildings. Again, this site is in the metropolitan area, and it does allow for community service opportunities in the inner city. We've estimated a purchase price and a rehabilitation cost of $3.5 million for a school in Minneapolis. The last site we identified is the former St. Croix Boys Camp in Pine County. That has 80 acres along St. Croix River with existing facilities and structures. It is a little more remote. However, it has been mothballed for a few years, but it does have good opportunities since it was set up as a camp. We've estimated the price. The Department of Admin has this listed as a minimum value of $1.1 million, which additional rehabilitation costs since it's been mothballed, we estimate about $2.5 million to stand up a facility there. Now, the program is really funded by two different ways, a base funding formula and also the matching shares between the federal and state. Now, the funding formula is based on $14,000 per cadet that is anticipated to be graduated through the program, of which that cost, the federal government would provide 60% of the funding, and the state would provide a 40% state match. The state would also be responsible for any facility construction or rehabilitation, and any costs over and above that agreed to budget amount becomes 100% state responsibility. Usually the staffing model for a startup program, you usually staff for about 200 cadets per year, which is two classes of 100, one starting in January, one starting in July. With that staffing model, the total annual budget would be $2.8 million, of which the state annual share would be $1.12 million every year. Okay, we are also asked to take a look at startup costs. And the National Guard Bureau, through the cooperative agreement, will start funding this program 6 months prior to the first start date of class. And so anything prior to that would be considered a state startup cost. We've anticipated a 1.5 to 2 year planning cycle to get this process started to be able to recruit cadets for that first class. So we'd have about 1.5 years of state startup costs that would be 100% state responsibility. We've estimated those costs to be $350,000 in state funds, and that would pay for personnel and recruiting prior to that 6 month federal funding window. In addition, the state would be responsible for the facility construction or rehabilitation. If you build a new facility, it's about $5 million. If we purchase and rehab one, it's about $3.5 million. We surveyed the other state programs that are in existence, and about 85% of them are funded through legislative appropriations, and the remaining 15% are funded mostly through federal appropriations, with some money from the Department of Education and businesses and foundations providing donations. We did find one state, the state of Wisconsin, that is completely funded through the Education Department. And in statute, what they did is they set it up for the Department of Education would deduct the student aid payments to that district where that cadet was from that's enrolled in the program. And so that's the only state that was totally education funded. The rest are mostly legislative appropriations or a combination. Also in our survey, the existing program directors recommended that if you do stand up a program, try to get the funding source through the Department of Education or through the education side because it's more consistent and the program can work well with the Department of Education then. Some cost-benefit analysis we conducted. In 2005, the General Accounting Office surveyed or conducted a study on all existing programs, and they determined that the programs spent between $9,300 and up to $31,000 per cadet that graduated through the program, with the average of being $15,898. They also surveyed the state directors and estimated and provided an estimate of what they thought they would need to meet the cooperative agreement requirements, and they came up with a number of $16,900. This is important to note because anything above that $14,000 is 100% responsibility for the state. The National Guard Youth Challenge Foundation is the support side to this program, and they've been lobbying Congress to change the funding level from the $14,000 base up to $17,000, and then to also change the funding formula to a 75% federal share and a 25% state match. And the survey of the directors that we spoke with, they recommended that if they change the base from $14,000 to $17,000 without changing the funding formula of up to 75%, their states would have a tough time coming up with their state match portion. Now, the program effectiveness, during the residential phase, cadets averaged about a 1.7 grade level increase in reading and a 1.6 grade level increase in mathematics based on the TAD testing. And they also performed at an average of over 70 hours of community service. So it does work. Since the program's inception, we've had over 73,000 graduates from the program, with over 61% of these cadets earning their GED. 5% were awarded high school diplomas, 4% were awarded alternative high school diplomas, and 100% of the participants were dropouts or expellees. Now, the startup procedures and timeframes, what we did is we identified about a 30-month window to be able to look at standing up a program until the first class start date. And we divided it into three different categories. One would what we call a staff procedural work, where internally we would work with the National Guard Bureau to start the cooperative agreement, sign all the letters, and get final approval. That would take about 10 months. Then it becomes into a once you got approved, then you need to start staffing up the program, find a facility. Prior to that 6 months of starting the new class, you have the estimated startup cost, which would include about $350,000 to be able to hire administration and hire recruiters prior to that 6 month window when the federal government starts providing 60%. Then at the 6 months out, the National Guard Bureau would start funding the program at a 60% level, and the remaining staff would be hired and trained at that point in time. Now, the Department of Military Affairs does not recommend standing up a National Guard Youth Challenge program at this time, just at this time, based on the following observations. It is expected that the Department of Defense will incur budget reductions under the new administration that may impact the federal match portion, or at a minimum, limit the funding to existing programs. Also, the state of Minnesota is expecting a budget shortfall, which we're all familiar with, that could impact the state match portion for facility construction and rehabilitation, which could be $3 to $5 million, and startup costs, which are $350,000, and the annual commitments, which would be $1.12 million. Thirdly, the Minnesota Department of Education was one of two states to receive a grant from the U.S. Department of Education to identify and retain at-risk students that were at risk of dropping out and to retain them back into the school system. And we really believe that the Department of Education might be better off training our youth. And lastly, the Department of Military Affairs is focused on the important issues of sustaining our roles as a key component of national defense, responding to a state emergencies, and being a unique capability for the community. This includes Starbase Minnesota, drug demand reduction in the counter drug program, and the Kids to NASA distance learning program. Again, I kind of went through this pretty quickly, but I appreciate the opportunity to present this report, and I welcome any questions or comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Doty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first is a real easy question to answer, I guess. Is the decision on page 4 that you talked about right at the end here to not move forward with Youth Challenge at this time, is that a final decision, or are you still looking for opportunities that may not be as expensive as those you have already examined?
Madam Chair, Representative Doty, it is our belief that this is our final recommendation as of this time. At this time.
Okay, then, Madam Chair, in the future at some point, I want to be sure that you are aware that within just a few miles of Camp Ripley, the old Regional Treatment Center exists in Brainerd. That is a series of state-owned, formerly state-owned and still in many cases state-owned buildings, dormitories, food service buildings, a complete classroom and residence section, just begging for some people to come there, within 10 to 15 minutes of all the training and people at Camp Ripley. If cost of buildings is a major option or a major obstacle, this maybe is an option that wouldn't cost you much money to look into.
Madam Chair, Representative Doty, will take that under advisement. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Representative Phelps.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the report. I really appreciate it. And I really like this program, but at the same time, I can't argue that now is not the time to start it. And so hopefully in a few years when things are better, we can take another look at it. But I just want to thank you for your work on this and the in-depth report. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, thank you.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sitting here trying to word my questions appropriately without having anybody read too much into it or otherwise, but I had a conversation this weekend with a legislator that I admire and respect, and we're talking about a specific segment of society, and this is where there's some controversy that surrounds this, so please bear with me while I try to navigate through this. We have students, we have children attending school that are here undocumented, that have come from other countries and are here undocumented going through our school. Some are scholars, graduate very, very high in their class, and some do not. Some want them to go on to college, at in-state tuition, and some do not. And some wish to be rise to be above board, if you will, above ground, be documented, and some do not. And we understand that. So I'm just trying to lay out my case here. Would this be a scenario where a child would be able to participate in a program such as this to become documented here in the state of Minnesota and be eligible to go on to college at in-state tuition? That's one question. Another question would be, if a child graduates high school and is eligible to go on to school and would like in-state tuition, would it be possible, again, not reading too much into it, I'm just asking, would it be possible for that undocumented student to enlist, whether it's the Minnesota National Guard or the military, and become documented or a U.S. citizen or whatever the case may be, and then go on to further their education? Hopefully I explained that okay, and I'd like a response, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton. The Minnesota or the National Guard Youth Challenge Program has very specific admission standards. In fact, you have to be 16 to 19 years of age, be a legal resident of the United States, have to be a high school dropout or at risk of a high school dropout. You have no pending legal action or a felony conviction whatsoever. Must be drug and alcohol free on enrollment. And you must be physically, you have to prove that you're physically and mentally able to complete the program. So it is a very stringent program to get into. And so that might answer your first question about undocumentation, is that you have to prove that you're a citizen of the United States. On the second part, entering the service, I would like to refer to Colonel Almas here.
Madam Chair, Representative, certainly service is a way for people who are in the country legally but not citizens, for them to accelerate their quest for citizenship. So certainly if someone is a registered alien and they join the service and complete that term of service, especially if they can complete a deployment, that accelerates their ability to become a citizen and puts them on fast track. So there is a route for them to become a citizen through that way. But as Mr. Lean mentioned, this program is only open for documented aliens or citizens, so undocumented alien would be allowed in.
Right.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that as well. And I understand, and I just wanted to raise the question. Just so I'm clear on that last scenario, if somebody was here undocumented, they can indeed, like I said, a child is brought here to no fault of their own, they go through our school system, they graduate. If they graduate, and whatever the case, they want to enlist in the Army or in the military, they're able to do that if they're here undocumented, or some people would class them illegally. They're able to enlist?
Madam Chair, Representative, I would have to get back to you on the specifics of that. I'm not sure how the process is if someone is undocumented about how they would get into service, but they would have to resolve that legal hurdle before they're able to join service, and I'm sure our recruiters would be more than happy to help them work through it, but I'm not exactly what that process is at this time.
Madam Chair.
Representative,
could we just set up a time? Could you swing by and visit with me on that? Because it's that legal hurdle that we're trying to get over for these students, and I've always said education is never part of the problem. Education is always part of the solution, and that's the hurdle that we're trying to get over. So just trying to explore all possibilities, and please don't read any more into that than what I've said. We're just opening up the dialogue and just trying to have the conversation. So thank you for this information as well. Fantastic program. So thank you.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lean, your recommendation is to not go forward at this time. Is there any one most compelling reason why you'd recommend not going ahead with this at this time, and if there is, do you foresee anything in the next year or two that would change, that would bring this issue back up again?
Madam Chair, Representative Szymanski, at this time, like I said, I pointed out some observations, about four different observations, and a lot of it has to do with funding, both at the federal and the state level. And then also just the mission of the Minnesota National Guard. We are kind of stressed with some of the deployment issues and being able to respond to local community emergencies and disasters. You know, I'm sure the Adjutant General would love to take a look at it in the future. But just right now, we're just making this recommendation based on those observations. Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I ask something? Madam Chair, Representative, just to add to that too, as Mr. Lean mentioned, we need to make sure we accomplish our federal and state mission first. As we go into the summer, we're going to be going over the 3,000 mark of soldiers and airmen deployed once again. And as we look at the conditions up in northwest Minnesota right now, we're hoping for a very slow thaw up there because the conditions are equal to or worse than they were in 1997 when we had the flood of the century up there. So we're very cognizant that we have to make sure that we can be that agency of last resort and answer the call to state and nation at any time. So we're a little reluctant from that perspective. And the second thing that Mr. Lean also talked about briefly is one of the tag priorities. One of his watchwords is he doesn't want to start something unless he has a very high comfort level that will be able to sustain it over time. Meaning he doesn't want to start this out and get some young people interested about, hey, here's a gateway for me to continue my education, get my high school degree or a GED. But then some people who maybe had an older brother go and they want to go into the program or older sister who attended, and now we can't because we didn't sustain the funding of the program. He would like to look at that long-term commitment and feel comfortable with that before we move forward, because you don't want to start something just to say, well, it was a good idea, but, you know, times are tight now, like they are this year, we're going to stop.
I'm going to ask you a question. I've sat on the Veterans Affairs now for my third year, and I remember soldiers on the same chairs that you are who were immigrants, and they were able to go into war, and then they would become citizens. When did that change?
Madam Chair, it hasn't changed. I think they were probably legal immigrants at that time, and that's the only thing I would say. Oh, there.
No, absolutely. They were. That's yep. How World War II. A lot, and they would. I didn't mean to butt in, but they were. They were allowed to do that, and if they did that, they got their citizenship. And I remember seeing some of the veterans actually crying because they were so honored to be a citizen. Any of us that sat on that committee, we were crying all the time, even Dave. So I just wanted to know when that changed.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry I didn't make myself clear because, in fact, they can. There is a gateway to citizenship, and it's a fast track for people who are legal immigrants into this country to become a citizen through their service. So all I said is I'm not sure if they're not documented immigrants about how that process works. But obviously, like I said, our recruiters would be more than happy to try to help facilitate the process to make them a legal documented alien and then to recruit them into our service and then help them become a citizen. But obviously, there's some more information I need to gather on this and provide the committee so we can be very clear about this and what we can do to help those people jump that hurdle as referred to earlier.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Thank you again for coming. Hopefully someday we'll have facilities and kids and we'll all be great. So thank you again.
Thank you.
This is all we have today because I want you all to go to the Early Childhood Summit. That's where one of the things that I went my master's is in. So I'm letting everybody learn what I learned in grad school. So, thank you again for being here. I better adjourn you. There we go. Yeah.